I don't know what you should do, Mike.
I think I'd rather take a bullet in the head.
I'd rather stick needles in my eyes.
I don't know what to say. Felger
and Mass. The Beyond Dumb 2 to 6 show, yeah. Right?
Jackpot!
98.5, the Sports Hub.
We asked LeBron last night if he'd waive his no-trade clause. Now it's your turn. If the deadline comes tomorrow, do you want to be on this team when that deadline passes?
Yeah, I'm tired of being traded. Hey, that's not a good thing, but I just want to be where I want to. And I like it here. I mean, it hasn't been as planned, but I definitely want to be here. We have a real chance to win the NBA championship, and I want to be a part of that.
The mouthy, overrated little peanut, that's what we're going with?
Yeah, the overrated mouthy little peanut. However you want, whatever permutation of that, we should make up the shirts, because I'd be the first to buy them, too, right after I made them. Peanut. You have to watch the other thing that backs up how just unwanted he was there. Last night, Cavs have this ridiculous game against Minnesota that they win in overtime. LeBron hits the dagger at the end.
It was a Christian Leitner play.
Yeah.
Right? A turnaround at the free throw at the buzzer.
Have you seen the celebration when LeBron hits it?
No.
It's like Garoppolo looking over Brady and McDaniel's shoulder in those preseason games. Like, guys, what's going on? Can I celebrate too? I'll show it to you during the break. It's amazing.
Isaiah Thomas grabs LeBron's jersey to try to get him to celebrate with him.
Can I have fun too? Get out of here, multi little overrated peanut. You'll be gone by tomorrow afternoon. Stop undermining the team, the coach, and me. You stink. Bye. Can I celebrate too? Looking up.
I still like Isaiah. He was good here.
He was fine. It was a cute story.
He wasn't the problem. It was the way people treated him.
Yeah.
You know, the MVP chance what bothered me, not the player himself. It's a lot to like about him. Tough, competitive guy. He just... No shot there in Cleveland with LeBron. No shot. Maz is right. Bad mix on the floor, off the floor, just the whole thing.
I mean, LeBron's just such a pill. He really is. If you don't bow to LeBron, forget it. It's over.
Okay, so we have that and the Patriots. John in Brockton on the Patriots. Hi, John.
Hey, guys. I got a quick theory on the Butler situation. I think he was going to be benched once he missed a team playing on Monday when he could fly out Tuesday and he practiced all week. I think Belichick had in his mind he was going to sit him no matter what. And that was a stick it to Kraft and stick it to Butler and make an example of him on national TV. And then win or lose, I think he was going to walk away as coach this year, and that's why Kraft had to re-sign McDaniels. Cause
how is it sticking it to Kraft? John, how is it so purposely losing the game?
Not purposely. I thought he could win it with Rowe in there from the Eagles. Okay. So he could win it without him and make an example of him saying, I'm going to get the team back.
Okay, I got you. It's not getting the team back. It's just proving the point that I call the shot and... you're not my guy, and I'm not going to let you have this stage to go off into free agency, or you know, whatever the reason was with Bill, or Butler was just sort of a jerk for the last year plus about his contract, and so whatever it was, he got on Belichick's bad side. That is clear. That's obvious. And so we get to this game, and Bill says, "I don't need you. I'm going to show the world." But that's not anything to do with Kraft. That's just Belichick and Butler.
Yeah, to me, it's about Butler.
That's just Belichick and his players. You don't get to carry on like that. And again, when I say carry on like that, again, just, you know, bust my balls on a contract, think you're bigger than the team. I guess he was late all the time during the year, or someone had to be driven around, whatever. So, you know, he gets on Bill's bad side, he carries on like that, and at the end of the day, Bill says, no, I'm not giving you the stage.
And this is why I think it correlates to Brady, because maybe some of these other players over the last few years have looked at Brady and said, well, you know, maybe I can start to get away with some of this stuff and kind of not go rogue, but be bigger than the team. Because, again, no one's bigger than the team to Bill Belichick. So he had to prove to the rest of them, fine, this one over here gets to get away with it because he's got bigger than the team and has the backing of the ownership. Don't think for a second the rest of you do.
Yeah, when he says nobody's bigger than the team, he really means nobody's bigger than Belichick. Like, that's the part of it that I've always find to be sort of unspoken. You know, he says team, he means him. But again, most of the time it works for him. What I find stunning, when you really think about it, okay, he played the guy for 3 years for 98% of the snaps. 98% of the time on defense, Bill Belichick deemed Malcolm Butler to be one of the players he had to have on the field.
While Malcolm Butler was presumably... showing up late or had to be driven around or was carrying him. This is what you hear is that it was really nothing during Super Bowl week, but it was like Rappaport said, an accumulation of things. And I guess Jordan Richards is there to drive him around because he can't be trusted to show up on time or whatever. But yet he played 98% of the time during the regular season?
Right, over 3 years. And even this year when he benched him in the New Orleans game, right, and then Rowe got hurt and he went in, he played 75% of the snaps in that game. Rowe came back later in the year. Butler still got the playing time. Butler still got the playing time in the postseason games. I mean, it was all in all, 98% of the time. And he decides in the Super Bowl, this guy's really not that good. I mean,
he didn't decide that. He decided, I'm going to bury you.
I know, but the idea that he would use that moment blows me away. Like, did you really think? Because I do believe what the caller said, that he believed, I'll put Rowe in there, we'll be none the worse for wear, and we're going to win the game anyway because we get Tom.
Definitely.
Right? I believe that. I don't think he was trying to lose the game on purpose or anything like that.
He thought he'd win with Rowe, and he was right up until 2 minutes left.
So you use a guy 98% of the time, and then you get to the Super Bowl and think, we'll be the other guy. Like, what? How do you come to that conclusion? Bite the bullet, let him go. End of story. What a mistake.
Joel in Belmont. Hi, Joel.
Hey, I say that you end up paying Malcolm Butler at the beginning of the year. I think you create another all-star season out of him. Give the guy some confidence. And then he makes a play in the Super Bowl for you and probably wins it. I mean,
to me, and I'm sorry to cut you off. It's a bad, sad story what happened with Malcolm Butler, period. His whole arc. That should be a perfect Patriot. Undrafted, works his way off the bottom of the roster, works his ass off, competes his balls off when he's on the field. Even through all of his struggles, he still competes. He fights every ball to the ground, gets the most out of his ability. And again, because he wasn't drafted, you don't have to pay the guy like Ty Law and Deion Sanders. That's a guy that you should be able to keep on your roster and pay and make happy and be a core guy on your team because he's such a competitor. And that's what I thought he was. And he sort of goes the other way, and then Bill overreacts at the end with him, and now it's like, boy, did that end poorly.
Oh, did it ever. And at the end of the day, he couldn't stomach putting him into the Super Bowl and potentially using the Super Bowl as a springboard to a free agent deal or a big deal somewhere. Again, you want to say he was a problem? Think of the guys who are problems that Belichick has brought in here. Albert Haynesworth, biggest dog ever, with the biggest list of problems ever. Kenny Britt, arrested 7 times. James Harrison.
Can I include some? Randy Moss.
When I
say Randy Moss, questionable effort, pain in the ass behind the scenes. I'm not talking like Randy Moss a criminal. I'm talking about football character. Atrocious football character. Bill puts up with that.
And at the end of the day, all those guys are brought in. Why? Because they can help us win games. They can help us win games. Albert Haynesworth, now look, it didn't work. But ultimately, we think he can help us win games, and it's a good deal. They get to the Super Bowl with Malcolm Butler, who they played 98% of the snaps, and they decide that that's not going to help him win a game.
Well, you keep saying that. You know that's not. They knew he would help them win a game. That wasn't. He did it because he wanted to bury him for a personal reason.
Oh, my gosh. It's so asinine. It is just so, so asinine, really.
Felger and Maz. The Sports Hub. Felger and Maz are on your phone with the radio.com app.
Get off the internet.
From 98.5, the Sports Hub.
This is an absolute home run deal for the Los Angeles Lakers. They have got to be, as soon as they get off this trade call that they're having with the NBA right now, they're going to take a victory lap. They have been trying for months to clear cap space. And the Lakers just made an incredibly huge major move. They have now cleared the 2 max salary spots that they need for their dreams this summer of going after LeBron James. The Cavaliers have just cleared a path for the Lakers to go after Paul George and LeBron James this summer.
And does that allow your pick to creep back into the top 5? Because right now the Lakers are trending out of the bottom 10. They've won 3 in a row, 7 of 10, and have been playing well. And yeah, you have other teams like the Knicks now who are going to catch them in the, again, tankathon standings about Porzingis. So is it the Lakers get worse and does that draft pick get better? Or what? I don't know. The Lakers just interest me because I think there's always a shadow sort of situation. You and the Lakers, you're coming up at the same time. And, you know, did Cleveland get better? Did Cleveland get better? So we'll see.
I think at the very least that Cleveland's done one of two things.
They can't be any worse.
Right. They can't be any worse. And they've done everything in their power to try to convince LeBron to stay. Good luck, because he's given them no indication that he will. But if it's a better team, feels more comfortable, it'll be easier, I think, for them in theory, to try to ease him back in this offseason and not have him go to L.A. So that's one. And two...
Well, hold on. Windhorst said the Lakers just created the space to go get him.
Well, that's a problem.
So did the Cavaliers help out the Lakers?
Inadvertently, they might have helped L.A. to try to get LeBron this offseason. So they might have screwed themselves while also trying to help themselves. But on the surface, when I saw all this, I was like, okay, they're getting rid of dead weight. This was an old team, one-dimensional. Maybe they're trying to like show LeBron, hey, we are committed to doing whatever the hell you want here. So that's one. And two, well, they got rid of the one guy that obviously was not a fit and was undermining the whole operation since he got there. And that's Isaiah Thomas. Bye. Bye, little mouthy peanut. Bye. You've been traded again.
It really is. It's unbelievable. I didn't realize, too, that the three guys that Cleveland got, with the exception of George Hill, they're all 25 or under. So, you know, they keep those guys, put them with Kevin Love if LeBron walks. Like, you know, they're hedging their bets a little, too.
And Brooklyn, your Brooklyn pick that you gave him for Kyrie, not blasting the trade. Good trade, obviously. But the Brooklyn trade is, Brooklyn right now is one loss out of the worst record in the league. Now, I know that maybe they're like a game and a half because of whatever, but they're, I think they're one loss behind the worst record in the league. So, you know, if Cleveland just hangs on to that Brooklyn pick and the trend continues, that could be a high pick for them. All right, so anyway, back to the phones. Mike in East Providence. Go ahead, Michael.
How are we doing, guys? I think we're crazy to think that Belichick's just going to walk away. The guy's a football lifer. He's not about to just walk away from what he built now. Mike, Charlie Weiss just sat next to you after the game and talked about how much he enjoyed seeing his kids every day, Bill Belichick, that is. And then the team says today that keeping Josh will make Bill's career longer, and I believe they will, because what did Bill Parcells do at age 66?
So, Mike, it's a Freudian slip. The team did not say anything, but ESPN Boston did. So, in some respects, that is...
I thought it was the team that said that, but I like the speculation, because what did Parcells do at 66?
What did Parcells do at 66?
He took the president of football operations with the Dolphins, and why wouldn't Belichick do something similar, especially... because McDaniels doesn't have the backbone to run the team.
Okay, so Bill could, but I don't see Bill as a front office guy. I've gone back and forth on that. Bill needs a whistle around his neck. He's a coach. And I think that Parcells did it, but did he do it successfully with the Dolphins? He did not have a good stint there. Those guys are wired to be coaches. They're wired to be down there. Vince Lombardi did the same thing. He went and was the GM of the Packers for a year, and he couldn't handle it, and she took another coaching job, even though he was in bad shape because he just couldn't stand it. And I think Bill would be the same way. I don't think he's a front office guy. The team did not put out that Josh Stang could keep Bill longer, but they might have. I mean, that might have been Michael Reese's source. And I think it's a little bit of spin. Maz mentioned this before. It feels like we're being sold a bill of goods, because common sense would just tell you that Josh being brought back and being brought back in the manner that he was, that last-ditch effort, tells you that the Crafts, and rightfully so, are protecting themselves against Bill leaving sooner rather than later. So why the spin? Why now all of a sudden is that, it doesn't mean that Bill's leaving, it means Bill's staying. And Maz hit on it before, and I think it's actually smart of the team. You can't let the players know that it's a lame duck year coming up or a walk year. So it's business as usual. Bill's the coach, is going to be the coach. And you can't, it's very hard, you know, teams really run from that, you know, last year kind of thing. And so they don't want anyone to know that it could be Bill's last year.
I mean, you just cut the legs off your coach if you tell the world this is it. That's it. Now he's got no authority, because the players look at it, particularly the ones with multi-year deals, and say, what are you going to do? You're out of here anyway. You can't do anything to me. See you later. Next year I'm here and you're not. Goodbye.
I'd be stunned if Josh were not the coach in 2019.
It feels like it's going that way. Again, my initial instinct when the thing happened was, oh my God, Belichick's walking. And then sort of, you know, 10 minutes goes by and you sort of, you know, follow some of the commentary and you say, no, one more. This is it. This is the passing of the baton. 2018 is the transition year, the handing of the scepter from one guy to the next, and McDaniels is the next guy.
Bill in Framingham. Hi, Bill.
How you doing, guys? I think Belichick did harm to his reputation and irreparable harm to that locker room. How a guy's going to come in the spring and listen to that stick and knowing that, hey, he could pull the plug on any of us at any time. And
well, he's always done that. He's always had that. He's always held that over the players. So that's not the loss in confidence would be that it cost them a game, a big one. That's when you lose. He's always been heavy-handed with the players and always, and that's not going to get people to tune out. It's going to be when a decision that's based on that is now costing you games, not winning you games. That's when you lose. But I don't think and I said this yesterday. If all of a sudden he's lost the locker room or players tune him out, shame on the players. Now, don't be stupid, fellas. It was a bad decision made for the wrong reasons, okay? But he's a human and it happens. balance out all the good decisions he's made for the right reasons. And then tell yourself, should you listen to him? And the answer is yes. So I would, you know, say to the fans or anyone, don't go overboard. It was a bad, bad moment for him. And Bill's had a couple this year. I think the Garoppolo trade is still even worse. Not to pick up the phone from Cleveland is just blows me away. But on balance, his batting average is really, really good. So don't tune him out. That's stupid.
He's just got to make sure he gets the key guys to buy in. And when I say that, I mean like Hightower, Brady, Gronk. And look, Brady's going to show up and play football. Okay, and for that matter, Gronk probably will too. Hightower on the defense, like, you know, I mean, maybe he buys in too, and then there's no issue there whatsoever. But all three of those guys liked the comment by, you know, or liked the Instagram post by Butler. And to me, they're looking at Bill going, Bill, you effed up, pal.
Here's Elias in the truck. Hi, Elias.
Hey, Felger. So on top of the whole Butler situation, Belichick blew all the trades he did on the defensive line. Look at Cassius Marsh and Coney Ealy. I think the pass rush was probably the second biggest reason the Pats lost the Super Bowl.
So Murray's been big on this as well. How was his offseason last year,
Murray? Not great. Don't forget that two-year deal he gave to Alan Branch, too. But he was really useful down the stretch. Maybe that knee had recovered. I would have thought it would have after that Miami game. You couldn't have used him as you were getting it ran down your throat in that game on Sunday, too. We'll just make him inactive again.
Or no, but give the uniform to Butler just so he can stand there all day and be embarrassed on national TV. That's like, so you could have activated Branch instead of Butler. You know, if you weren't going to play, that's always been my thing from the start. If you're not, if he's out, he's out.
Any other body could have helped, it felt like.
Putting him in uniform and just standing him there was nothing but vindictive, it felt like, served no purpose.
I mean, Murray, when you get right down to it, the offseason moves that he made, which of them were good?
Ultimately, Gilmore.
Yeah, Gilmore was good, right. That's a good one. Gilmore was good. Ultimately, that ended up being
I'm not
fine.
Giving you Brandon
I was going to say Cooks?
No, sorry.
Wash?
No, they overpaid.
No, I would have rather a defensive player in that first round rather than, you know, Butterfingers over there.
But really, I mean, Cooks, Ealy, you go right down Dwayne Allen.
Cassius Marsh, right down, two picks for him. Two picks?
Still nothing was worse than Garoppolo.
And even right. The draft. Like, you know, the draft didn't work out great. He got something out of Wise, but Rivers got hurt. He didn't hit on that either.
On Garoppolo. All he had to do was pick up the phone from Cleveland. They were willing to give you that Houston first-round pick, which means you'd be sitting right now with the fourth overall pick. It's right there. All he had to do was pick up the phone. But you know why he didn't? And this is why it's related to the Butler story. He didn't pick up the phone from Cleveland for the same reason he buried Malcolm Butler.
Ego.
Personal.
Yeah.
He liked Garoppolo.
Yeah, ego.
He liked Garoppolo. Well, but even beyond ego, or not even ego. Just, he liked Garoppolo and wanted to take care of him. So, Garoppolo clearly didn't want to go to Cleveland. Who would? So, Bill didn't even entertain it because I want to take care of the kid. I like him. Why did he bury Malcolm Butler? Can't stand that guy. Been a pain in my ass for over a year. I don't like you. I'm going to show you.
Whiffed on Gillislee. Rex Burkhead was kind of a wash.
Different, but those are just garden variety personnel misses.
Yeah. No, just overall, I think.
The Garoppolo decision and the Butler decision are rooted in the same psychology, in the same root. You're my guy, you're not my guy, I'm going to treat you accordingly.
Right. I call that ego, because it means it's about him. It's about him and how he feels, versus, which is why I use the ego word. But totally, he put his own selfish wants and interests ahead of the team. Totally. There's just no way around that in this case when you look at it. It is really stunning.
I have a Bruins call on the board. Should I take it?
Sure.
Yeah.
It's from Georgia, which is weird. Alex in Georgia on the Bruins. Hi, Alex.
Hey, so I called in October and said that Tuca needs to go, and that's all I said. But I'm calling myself out and going to take court, and I'd like to adjust that to
why
Tuca can stay, ... for now.
Why? I take part in you, Alex. Why would you say, do you think Tuukka Rask has been the difference for the team this year?
No, I think the defense has improved in front of him, but he's been playing a lot better than he was back when I called in October.
Alex, he's been very good. Very, very. He hasn't lost in 21 games or something. He's on a run that hasn't been seen since Pete Peters. So he's been great. I'm just here to tell you he's not the reason. The whole team's been freaking awesome.
Yeah, it's a collective effort. They're a buzzsaw. It's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. Last night, I thought they were cooked. They get down 1-0, and I thought the Rangers had more hop, and I thought second night of back-to-back, like, this is it. They're going to lose tonight.
And they've still been better in front of the other guy than Rask, as impossible as that is to believe. Khudobin's record is 11-3-4. Khudobin's lost three times in 28 games. Rask is 22-8-4. So they have a better winning percentage under Khudobin. You know what Rask's save percentage is? 925. Guess what Khudobin's is?
925.
Rask has a little bit better goals against, but they're both low twos. 209 versus 228. Both insane. So they've won as much with Khudobin as they have with Rask. As much. So if Khudobin was in here these last 2 months, I'm not telling you they would have won every game because Rask is a better goalie and has been great. So I'm not telling you they would have been on this run, but it'd be pretty close because it's not about the goaltending, as good as Rask has been. It's about the whole... Did you watch Tim Schaller last night?
He had a lot of space there too, didn't he?
Notice I did not say Guy Lafleur. Tim Schaller skated through four Rangers and went bar down on Henry Lundqvist.
I mean, he literally shot that thing straight up in the air to get it in there. It was unbelievable.
So they've got guys like Tim Schaller dangling out there, like freaking Teemu Selänne. It's the team is just... Do you know they have the best record in the league?
They have one regulation loss since December 18th.
They have the best record in the league. They're 1 point behind Tampa, and they have a game in hand, but if you go by win percentage or points percentage, they have the best record. They're going to win the President's Trophy.
I mean, it's unbelievable. Really,
the way they're going, they're going to be the best team in the league.
How do you think that projects for the spring?
Scares the crap out of me.
Me too. Yeah.
I hate that President's Trophy. That President's Trophy is a curse.
One and done.
It does. Yeah, it's like there's a banana peel there on April 15th.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
I like football, and I like the Patriots and all of that.
Hold on, I'm not done.
This is Felger and Mass, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
We do have another Bruins thought or two and a Red Sox thought. Maybe we'll get to it next hour as well. As we start to get on with the rest of our lives. Chris and Lowell, go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, hey, guys. A couple of thoughts that I had on the Isaiah Thomas trade, besides the obvious reason that, he wasn't getting along with the rest of the team there. Now, I'm not a big Lakers fan. Haven't watched a lot of Lakers basketball, but one, I'm thinking this might make the Lakers a little bit better with a veteran presence, and they might screw the Celtics out of a couple of draft spots. And then two, it might also position the Cavs to block LeBron from going there, knowing that that Thomas is there and that the history and that they don't get along. It might block him from going there.
Okay, so I think it's just sort of the opposite, Chris, on both accounts. The Lakers don't want Isaiah long-term. In fact, they love the fact he's got an expiring contract. That's why they liked it. As Windhorst said, that cut that we played you, they might even buy him out now. If you listen to some people, Jimmy.
And that would be a good thing for the Celtics, actually. If Isaiah gets bought out and he doesn't play, he can't help them win games.
Okay. He's not going to help them win games.
See, he can't help them win games even if he's playing.
So this is what now other people would say to you, Maz, that actually you want Isaiah on the floor for the Lakers because Isaiah sucks and is going to lose some games.
Yeah.
So we got to, there's...
Let me give you some numbers to back this up.
There's all sorts of different camps here at play, Maz.
Let me give you some numbers to back this up. This was actually tweeted by one Sean Grandy, who you can hear tonight with Cedric Maxwell doing the Celtics.
A negative IT stat, I bet, huh?
Final numbers on Isaiah Thomas as a Cavalier.
How many of those did we get when Isaiah was a Celtic?
Zero.
Zero. Did we hear anything from Grandy or Gorman on Isaiah Thomas when...
There were playoff stats.
King of the fourth.
Negative?
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Either way, in 15 games in Cleveland, IT went 7-8. The Cavs went 7-8. In 406 minutes that he played, the Cavaliers were outscored by 132 points. His shooting percentage, 36%. From three, again, how many times did we see the King of the Fourth nail those threes, eh? IT, 25%.
Holy crap, that is so bad.
Oh, it goes on.
Marcus Smartian.
Of the 224 players who've played 15 games in 300 total minutes, his defensive rating, 118.6, and net rating, minus 15.1, both last in the NBA.
Wow.
He's a flash in the pan. It was a nice, cute little story. It's over for IT.
Don't you think, okay, but in fairness, that with that mix in Cleveland with LeBron, it obviously didn't work. If he's the guy, if he's the ball dominant factor there on a team, don't you think it's a much different story with him?
Sure, no. The numbers will be better. Ish. Well,
see, but that's why I say he can go to the Lakers and he can have a 35.9 somewhere and win him a couple of games. Like, the Cleveland thing, disaster. Complete, total disaster. As much of a disaster as you could possibly fathom. What a disaster that was.
But go ahead, Jimmy.
If you have watched him play, and I've watched a lot of the Cavaliers basketball, he's a step slow, his shots are off, he's not the same Isaiah Thomas because he's got the bad hip, And name me a player who has come back from this hip injury in the NBA. And the answer is no one has.
So you want him in L.A. because you think he'll make him worse?
Yes, but I don't think he's going to play in L.A. I think Lonzo Ball or Isaiah Thomas if you're the Lakers.
Well, so what I'm saying, though, is that they won't be on the floor at the same time, and Isaiah, he'll be better in L.A. than he was in Cleveland.
Oh, so what, you think he's going to accept being a bench player for the L.A. Lakers?
He texted Rachel Nichols, or his agent did, and said, I'm not coming off the bench. All caps.
That is so good. No, he might get bought out.
No, it's him. He lacks self-awareness.
Really, it is the... Who do you think you are? Like, that phrase, it was meant for him. Like, who do you think you are, dude?
I mean, if he can't get over that, the Celtic experience will have ended his career.
But again, I blame the Green Teamers. I at least partially blame you folks. When you chant MVP at the kid for a year, what do you think is going to happen to his head? I mean, when you overrate him like you overrated him, and put him on this pedestal and treated him like something that he wasn't, can you blame him if he comes out of the thing with a big head? You're the ones who chanted MVP. I blame you.
Oh, it's unbelievable, really. He was like, we were having the discussion a year ago at this time whether he was worth a max deal. Now he's sucked in Cleveland. He's been sent to the Lakers. They're talking buyout.
I remember being mocked for saying Avery Bradley was better than him.
Traded twice and might be bought out. What a fall. Again, huge credit to the Celtics and Danny Ainge for, not letting emotion again and not taking the cheese like we took the cheese. I took the cheese on Isaiah. I love the
you
guy.
Did.
I never call him an MVP. Please, that wasn't me. But I don't know. I liked and respected the guy. I thought he was worth a max contract. I did.
You were wrong.
Probably so, Jimmy. Probably so.
Wow.
Here's Roger in Marblehead on the Pats. Hi, Roger. What do you got?
Hi there. I just wanted to talk about, sort of as a fan, sort of the seismic shift in the feel about the Patriots. I'm sorry to say that we've quickly gone from a world of in Bill we trust to a one in which in Bill we question. And I have to say that my question, and forget about Malcolm and everything else for a minute, in addition to being tired of really the whole Belichick shtick in front of, the press and not answering anything, I'd like to know your thoughts on why the Patriots, in important games over the last several seasons, always start so badly.
It's legit.
You cannot, rightfully hope for a miracle every time, and it seems like they always start the games, important games, slowly. Like, they just can't get off their ass, and that seems to me a failure of coaching, that they're not ready to, take prisoners, in the first quarter.
So here's what I think it is, Roger. I think it's an excellent second guess. Like, do you have to come behind, from double-digit behind every single important game? And I think it's partly by design, where they come into the game and they let it play out to see what's happening so they can then make their adjustments. And it's generally worked for them, largely because they have Brady, all right? So it gives them that luxury of just sort of sitting back and letting to see how the game's played out, and then we'll adjust accordingly and come up with the right decisions at the end, thanks to our quarterback who keeps us in it, and that's how... But I don't know. I mean, do you have to do that every single game?
No. I mean, again, look, this is what? 5 times in the postseason they've fallen behind by 10 or more?
And they won the previous 4.
I mean, but again, it's a hard way to live.
Oh, my God.
You can't. I mean, that is walking on the edge. That is, sooner or later, you're going to just misstep.
See, to me, that's not undercoaching. That's overcoaching. That's like... That's been, thinking that you're so far ahead of the game that you can take some early punches and fall behind, but you'll figure it out.
Like the end of the 2015-16 season, whatever it was. Remember when they tanked the games and they just overthought it?
Exactly. I think it's a matter of that, not sort of undercoaching it. Let's take Pat in Rhode Island. Hi, Pat.
Hey, how you doing? I just want to say, I think Brady liked Butler's Instagram post because Brady knows Butler saved his legacy. He gave him the truck in the Super Bowl because if Butler does not make that pick, Brady goes from 4-2 to Super Bowls to 3-3, losing the last 3. Brady might not even be here because teams that lose undergo a huge transformation. They might slide Jimmy in. It makes me sick to think that Belichick didn't make that second half adjustment and sat that kid on the bench in national television. It makes me sick.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it singularly cost him the game, but it isn't. It's just insane to think that it happened.
Oh, it's and look, Mike, when I say that, earlier, when I was comparing him to, the Haynesworth thing, Bill could always ultimately just focus on the goal of winning. That's what I'm saying. Like, he looks at a guy like Haynesworth and says, I can bring him in. It's a good deal and help us win games. And with Butler, he couldn't do that. He couldn't look at Butler and say, I got to look past all my personal crap. We got to win the game. It's like he violated his own code. His code is always focus on what's important. Focus on winning the game. That's what we're going to focus on. And in this case, he couldn't get past it.
It's unbelievable that he succumbed to his own personal little petty bullcrap.
Felger and Maz. Felger and Maz.
We want to appeal to your ears.
Blood force drum!
We're going to run it right down their throat!
This is Felger and Maz. On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
As is often the case in like an exit interview type situation, the Patriots take one last stab at it at the highest level with owner Robert Kraft, Bill Belichick, Jonathan Kraft, and they say, would you consider staying if we did this? And the big question is, what is this? And there were two things, I'm told, that really made Josh McDaniel shift here. Number one, Bill Belichick said to him, I want you to be by my side. I'm going to open my world to you, show you how I view roster building, how I look at financials and the salary cap. And to McDaniels, who's 41 years old, the chance to be with Belichick, arguably the greatest coach of all time, 65 years old, to have that opportunity was viewed as to be extremely valuable to him. And the second part of this that appealed to Josh McDaniels was when the Patriots sort of sold him on the idea that his kids, who are 12, 10, 6, and 3, would have stability because they were willing to make a long-term commitment to him, that in this coaching profession, it's hard to have your kids in the same school system for their entire youth, but they were willing to make a commitment to him from a time frame perspective that was possible. So Josh McDaniels takes that information that he didn't have, Max, up to this point. I mean, this is Tuesday, and he didn't have that information. Now he did, and he had to make that decision. Do I stay with the Patriots, or do I go with the Colts?
And that whole piece, and not, you know, it's nothing against Mike Reese. But I think his reporting here represents what the organization would like out there. And that is, and on one level, it's smart. On one level, it's smart of them. But that doesn't mean I'm buying it. You know, Josh decided to return because Bill said, I'm going to open my world to you. Doesn't that sound like a... That sounds like a fairy tale to me.
Silly is what it is.
It's silly.
He's been around him long enough that he knows it all. Come on, what else is there to show the guy? He had been a head coach. You brought this up earlier, Maz. And a lot of what he's learned from Bill, including being secretive and somewhat standoffish, he did that in Denver. Read anything about his time in Denver and why he flamed out and why he's persona non grata there. Because he was like Belichick 2.0 in Denver. What else is there to learn?
I mean, Josh doesn't know how they handle the salary cap. Can't he, like, their contracts are all the same. They stagger their bonuses. They, like a lot of teams, they backload money in some cases. It's all right there in front of you. It's not that hard to figure out. Especially when you're there every day looking at it. So, like, it's obvious. And they're tough with money. They don't overpay. They're careful not to overextend themselves. That's just a core Belichick philosophy that they've had for 18 years. Josh needs Bill to bring him into the office and tell him that. That's just silly. Josh doesn't know how Bill treats players. He's been watching it for... Josh has been there on and off for 18 years.
Call it 15
Call
total.
It 15. He was going for 2 or 3 in the middle. But he's been around forever. So that's just... That feels like... No! That feels like a fairy tale.
Oh, yeah. That's somebody sell you a bill of goods. That's what that is. So, again, first of all, he's been there for all of it. He had a head coaching experience, all of it. And then on top of it, you're dead to the other 31 teams, pal. What do you need the knowledge for? None of them are going to hire you now anyway. Like, when you look
That's
at it,
point.
When you look at it in those terms, what good does Belichick opening up his world to you do? Because you can't go sell it anyway. I mean, maybe a couple of your buddies out there will hire you. So I don't want to say 31 for 31. But the reality is, you sold your chance at a head coaching job to stay here. That's what you did. You sold it. And that's okay. I mean, I'm not, you know, he made a choice and no question about it. But what good does that, you know, the next team that interviews him, what do you think the first question they're going to ask is? What did you learn from Bill, or are you going to back out on us too?
So that whole thing about opening my world to you just sounds silly. Silly, silly. And then today, ESPN Boston, headline, Josh McDaniels' return might extend Belichick's coaching window. Reese writes that it actually might prolong his stay on this island because it reduces what would have been a major strain. Like, this premise, like, I agree with it, and I've been talking about it for a while. That Bill was due to have a real pain-in-the-ass offseason. New defensive coordinator, new offensive coordinator, maybe new special teams coordinator. He has to go pick the next Jimmy Garoppolo. All of that. Like, that's a lot to ask of a 66-year-old guy, which happened to be a pain in his ass. And Reese writes, that, you know, that very thing. It was shaping up to be one of Belichick's most challenging years because he was going to have to replace McDaniels, Patricia, and maybe even special teams coach Joe Judge, whose contract is expiring. McDaniels' return takes a major headache away from Belichick, as the Patriots didn't have a clear in-house candidate to replace the offensive coordinator. It probably would have meant Belichick devoting more time to that side of the ball like he did in 05 when Charlie Weiss departed and McDaniels was being eased into the play-calling role. So the whole premise here is that it'll be a lighter workload for Belichick, and thus he'll want to stay longer. And this I summarily reject as well. McDaniels isn't coming back if he has to wait another 3 years for the job. That's just not what was happening there. And, oh, please make me laugh about the family. Like, that's laughable. Laughable. He didn't mind changing schools with his kids in the morning when he showed up to Foxborough for the going-away party. But now all of a sudden he didn't want to move the kids? Just stop with that. Like, that's a joke.
Yeah, I don't believe that either. I think this is it for Bill.
Okay, but so the family thing's a joke. The opening up the world seems like a fantasy. And this thing now, it actually extends his window, which I don't believe either. I don't believe Josh stays unless he thinks it's coming in short order. And so I think this is spin again, but this spin might be coming from a good place, as we discussed before. You don't want the locker room to know that this is Belichick's walk year, lame duck year, etc. That's usually trouble. And so if the team is putting it out there for the locker room's benefit and everyone's benefit, that Bill ain't going anywhere. In fact, he might be in it now for the long haul because of this. That's fine. That's actually to their benefit, and I don't blame them for doing it. I'm still not buying it.
No, I don't buy it either. I mean, again, the last thing you want to do is undercut the legs of your coach in the final year of his contract. And maybe, you know, again, I wondered yesterday, was there some bartering there? You know, Bill probably said, look, I was going to give you the last year anyway. I was going to give you that anyway. So, you know, I'll give you one more and we'll hand the keys to Josh and that'll be the end of it. I mean, in terms of the workload, you know, I suppose there is a chance that he looked at it and said, you know, look, I got a lot on my plate. I'm not sure I want to coach next year. How about if we bring Josh back? Fine, I'll give you one more. But that's all you're getting.
Yeah, I think that seems plausible.
Yeah, like I'll give you one more. We'll hand off the baton, and that'll be the end of it. But if you go into the season saying this is it, think of that circus. Think of that circus, and that's just on the media side. Even within your own locker room, as you're saying, if you got a defiant player in there, screw you. What are you going to do? You ain't cut me because you're not here next year anyway.
Recipe for disaster.
Especially a defiant player that may still have it in the back of their mind, you screwed up Super Bowl 52. You know? Like, yeah, I think this is, I'm with you on this. This is positive spin. You have to brainwash some of these guys that might be off the reservation if they knew this was his walk year.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Maz.